Today is July 27, 1998. I am Mary Kay Miller Feist, a volunteer interviewer for the Germans from Russia Heritage Collection at North Dakota State University Libraries in Fargo. It is a pleasure to be visiting with Sister Dominic in Good Counsel, Mankato, Minnesota. Sister Dominic was my 8th grade teacher in Strasbourg. Okay, would you give me your chosen name? The name you chose when you became a sister?
A Dominic.
Why did you choose Dominic?
I wanted a name in honor of the Blessed Mother, and every name that I thought about had been taken. And then I didn't want one of these manufactured names, you know, a piece of this one and a piece of that one. So I thought, well, St. Dominic is supposed to have had a lot to do with the promulgation of the rosary. So I thought that'd be a good name to take. So that's why I took Dominic.
Sister, what is your date of birth?
February 26, 1928.
Okay, where were you born? Can you also give me the town? Were you born at home? Were you born in a hospital?
I was born right here in Mankato, Minnesota, in St. Joseph's Hospital.
Oh, so are you originally from?
I'm from Mankato.
So you didn't travel too far from home?
No. No, I just had to come up the hill.
Great. What is your nationality?
I don't know. It's a mixture of German, I suppose. I suppose that's predominantly what it is, but my uncles and my aunts, what do they always say we were? Can't even think of that right now. It's that little country right between France and Germany. Luxembourg.
Okay.
They always said we're Luxembourgers, but I think it's a, what do they always say, a dog from every kennel?
Could you tell me your father's name?
Clarence.
And last name?
Clatius.
Okay. How about your mother and her maiden name?
Agnes Roerig.
Are they both living?
No, they're both deceased.
Do you know where your father, when he died, and where he was buried?
My father died right here in Mankato. He had a heart attack in our parish church and died in church, and is buried right here in Mankato at Calvary Cemetery.
How about your mother?
Mother died of a stroke, and she also is buried right here in Mankato in the Calvary Cemetery.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have one brother and one sister.
Okay, what order are you in the birth of the family?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest.
Oh, yes.
I'm the oldest.
Yes.
So we have something
the role models.
Well, we try to be. Were there any other family members or relatives that entered the religious life?
No, not to my knowledge. There was, I looked and I don't know who this lady is. There was a sister, Bernwarda, I think that's her name, Clatius. I have no idea, you know, where she's from or what branch of the family. I never knew her. Never knew she existed.
Is she part of the School Sisters of Notre Dame, too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were your parents very supportive of you joining?
No. No, they did not want me to enter.
Really?
That's a fact.
It seems like most parents are really excited when their daughters or sons would want to enter into the sisterhood or priesthood.
Well, this was not the case in our family.
Okay.
If this were not on tape, I'd tell you what my father said the first time.
No, some of them aren't supportive.
No.
You know, but it's a life you chose, and you have to live out your life to your satisfaction.
And you see, my father died before the rules were changed. See, when I entered, you could only go home twice in a lifetime.
Okay.
And my father died when he was 50 years old. And our rules were still very strict.
And he had a hard time
with this. He had a very hard time with this business of not being able to come home, not being able to eat with the family when they'd come and visit. He just thought it was just a bunch of nonsense.
What role did the Holy Scripture and prayer play in your home life?
Not a tremendous amount. I mean, we were not an overly pious family.
Who influenced you to enter the convent?
I had a teacher in sixth grade. She was a Notre Dame sister who was, I thought she was the best teacher I ever had, and I admired her and her work, and I think she was the one who really influenced me.
So you went to Catholic school?
Yes, I went to St. Peter and Paul School right here in Mankato from kindergarten right through senior year.
And did you have the school sisters from
all
Notre Dame?
All the way through. Sisters in Notre Dame. There's no other order, is there? You mean there's another order in the world besides the Notre Dame?
I enjoyed the ones that were in our school, I know. Did your local pastor influence your decision in any way?
None whatsoever.
None. Okay. Upon deciding on your religious calling, did you ever consider or think about what would be left behind, the social life?
No, I think I so wanted to do this that, I didn't think of those things that much. I don't know. The Lord has his ways, that's all I can say.
Of letting you know.
He just sort of leads one on, and when you look back, you say, well, this is why this happened. It's interesting.
At what age did you enter the convent?
Age 18.
Okay, and we talked about not being far from home, being you were right here from Mankato. What memories do you have leaving home to enter the convent? Like the day you left, what was it like coming here?
Well, my mother came. I don't even remember if we took a cab up here or who drove me up. I don't remember that. I know that Sister Charlotte, my senior homeroom teacher, came with us, and my mother was along. I know I was running around in my slacks until the last minute. My mother finally said, well, don't you think you better change clothes? And so I did, but she was weeping most of the time. You'd think that I were going to die, or that I was going to be dead or something. It was not a happy occasion. It was very difficult. I was getting what I wanted, but my folks were very upset and not happy with my decision.
What was it like when you got here? Did you feel real welcome?
It was very different. Yes, I felt welcome. There was a group here before us, the class ahead of us, welcomed us and took us under their wing and just showed us the ropes, as it were, and got us acclimated to where we were going to sleep. And that was one thing. My mother had to come up and make sure my bed was all right. She had to check the mattress to see if I was going to have a good mattress.
How many other other gals were in your class when you started?
There were 18 of us when we first started.
And when you graduated, did all 18 finish and become sisters?
No. People dropped out in the candidature, as we called it. I think we lost 3 in the vicariate. By the time when we were professed, we might have been down to about 12 or 13. I'm not so sure my numbers right now. Two people were given to us, they were given to us. Two people from the class following us were pushed into our class and went to the novitiate with us. So our numbers were 2 more than what we had. At the present moment, there are going to be 7 of us celebrating our Golden Jubilee next year.
Next year.
Mm-hmm. So 7, and actually of the original 18, there are 6 of us left. Now, one died, so that means the others left.
But that's quite an accomplishment to have stayed in now and be celebrating this big event.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Will that be celebrated here?
Well, yes, it'll be celebrated here. We'll have one celebration in spring for those of us living here at Good Counsel. And then in the summer, And at that spring celebration, we can invite our friends and relatives within reason, not half the state. Mm-hmm. And then in August we have the provincial, where the whole province comes together to celebrate. So that'll be a year from now.
Okay. What was your typical daily schedule at the convent? What did you do in the morning? What did you do in the afternoon? What were your evenings like?
Well, our morning started, depending on where you lived, I suppose. Most of the time I remember we usually got up at 4:45 or 5 o'clock. And I think we had about a half hour to dress and get ready. And we went to chapel. We had morning prayer, half hour meditation, followed by breakfast. And then if we had some time, we did our little light housekeeping duties around the convent, whatever area you cleaned. So you probably mopped a room or whatever. And then we went to school. And we were in school, and we had a light, you know, just a break for lunch. And then we stayed in school until prayer time. And then we usually hurried home and got home in time for the afternoon prayer, which was a 15-minute meditation, and that was followed by supper, and supper was followed by an hour of recreation, and then we had quiet time for study so that we could prepare our lessons for the next day, and lights out, I think, at 10 o'clock.
Well, if you had to get up early,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure by 10 o'clock you were ready for bed.
We were.
It was a long day.
Mm-hmm.
Did you keep in touch with classmates?
No, because we were restricted in our writing. we received mail, I think, when we first came in, I think we received mail every Sunday. And we were restricted as to how much mail we could write and how many. And then even visits. So even being here from Mankato, I really did not stay in contact with my classmates that much.
Okay, were you able to return home often, like for funerals, weddings, special occasions, birthdays, being that you were so close?
No, because of the rules, we could only go home. Once we were professed, we could go home twice in a lifetime. That's the way it was when I was professed in 1949. Then we had a change in rule which said we could go home four times during our lifetime. And I was very fortunate because my mother and dad were celebrating their Silver Jubilee, their wedding anniversary. And I used one of those four home visits. And I can remember asking my provincial, I was stationed at Wabasha, Minnesota. I can still see where we were. We were standing in the kitchen. And I asked her if I could have permission to go home for my mom and dad's silver wedding. And she said, well, I'll have to ask my counsel. You know, a young, brash sister. I said, well, you know, well, you're the provincial. Why do you have to ask your counsel? And she said, well, because you're so young. See, I had only been professed 2 years at that time. And usually... you know, 2 years, that wasn't long at all. And I hadn't even renewed my vows. We were in for 3 years, and then after we'd have a summer, and we'd renew our vows for another 3 years. And then at the end of those 6 years, if we still were determined to become a sister, then we took our final vows. So I was just a sprout when I asked if I could go home for my dad and mom's jubilee, so, or wedding anniversary. And so I did get to go. I was not able to attend my brother's wedding. Could not.
Did you ever question your decision of joining the convent?
Probably the only time was when my dad died so suddenly, and mom was left alone with my youngest sister, who was only a fourth grader at the time. And my brother was in the Navy. But that was, and it wasn't a very serious, you know, thing. I just thought, I mean, it came to my mind, and I thought, well, what good would I really do? My mother was a very capable woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's a survivor. But she managed very well.
So you felt very good about your calling. You felt you made the right decision, and you
Yeah, I would not. I mean, if I had to do it over again, I'd do it over, you know, blink of an eye.
Good.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the training for the religious life. Describe the steps and the length of time it took you to go through the postulant stage.
Okay. We were candidates. They called us first-year candidates when we came in. So we had one full year of college courses and learning something about religious life. The second year, it was baptism by fire. They wanted to know, I guess, if we could teach. They sent us out to teach. After 1 year, and, you know, we've only had 1 year of college under our belts, but that was, we studied hard,
mm-hmm.
and we covered a lot of territory in that 1 year. And they sent us out to teach, and after that 1 year of teaching, then we came back in, and if we still persevered, then we entered the novitiate. And in the novitiate, we took religious classes. We learned all about the rule of the Notre Dames and about meditation, prayer, religious life. And after 1 year, then we were allowed to be professed. So it was a 3 year period. But as I said earlier, we took vows for 3 years and then a summer of reflection to see whether or not this was still, you want to still go on for another three. So we renewed our vows for three more years. So there was a period there of 9 years before you really said, this is it, and you took your final vows. So.
And what was that ceremony like when you took your final vows? What was the ceremony like?
Well, it was in the context of a mass. We exchanged our white veils for the black veil, and that was a real ceremony. At one point in the ceremony, well, that would be first. Is that, you said final vows?
Yes.
No, that was, I'm thinking of the first vows. When you took your first vows and you exchanged that white veil for the black veil, you know, that was part. There was one part in the ceremony that was very impressive. That was the part where all of us were kneeling in front of the altar. And if you've seen our chapel, you know what a large sanctuary we have.
It's beautiful. All right.
There was a point in the ceremony where we would prostrate ourselves on the floor of the sanctuary, and there were four large candlesticks at the corners, you know, and then they put a called the black pall over us, and that symbolized that we were dead to the world, as it were. And that part was very, very impressive. And of course, each one of us took our vows, and we said the formula of the vow together, and then we each one pronounced our name. It was very solemn, very solemn. And I remember I was on an all-time high when that, now the commitment was made, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had always made that commitment. As far as I was concerned, this was forever the first time I walked in the door. But now it was, it was official. And our vows were accepted by the bishop and by the church. So,
so you were?
We were solemn.
A sister.
Yes.
Okay. Describe the training you had for teaching. Did you got your college education up here, you said?
We started up here.
Okay.
And then after, while we were out teaching in that first year when we were still postulants, you remember I said we were 1 year here and
yes.
we had intensive
uh-huh.
courses. Then that second year, even though we were teaching, we took Saturday classes. And we always worked with a senior sister, somebody who was an experienced teacher. You know, you had a mentor. So you learned a lot from the sister that you were working with. They always paired us off with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then our education was piecemeal, as it were. I attended the College of St. Catherine, and I received a lot of my so-called classes teach actual methods classes. We took I took mine at Diocesan Teachers College, the how to teach math, how to teach reading, religion. So the different types, that's how that was taken. But my liberal arts course, I had a major in English, and I had a major in education and a minor in history. And then I went on from, after I graduated, and we waited a little while, then I went on for a master's degree. They wanted me to go on in English, so I went to Marquette University and spent about 3 or 4 summers there. And I figured this was not my cup of tea. I couldn't see myself teaching these guys, you know, who would be 6 foot something, and I'm supposed to teach them like Ode to a Grecian Urn. Can't you just see some big guy waxing eloquent and getting excited about an Ode to a Grecian Urn? Well, I didn't think that was my cup of tea. So I came back and I said to my director of studies at the time, I said, I don't think this is for me. And she said, well, you know, you're a little old yet to be switching masters. Well, I don't know, maybe I suppose in today's, yeah, I guess I was, if you looked at it from today's view, but my view was, I was in my 30s, I guess. And she said, well, what do you want to do? She said, I'll put you on my problem pile. So I guess I was on her problem pile for a while. And I didn't hear from her until finally she called me. She said, see, would you like to go into administration? I said, yes, I think I would. So then I got my master's degree and my specialist degree in elementary school administration. So, yeah.
Wow.
And was licensed. It was when they first put that 6-year program in, they called it the superintendent's license. You could be a superintendent if you wanted to be. Well, I wasn't that crazy. I liked what I was doing. I liked being in grade school. I liked the interaction with the children of that age. I taught, my favorite class was 6th grade. That was a level I really enjoyed. My first experience with 8th grade was out at Strasburg. And I had come from a very energetic, enthusiastic group of 6th graders. And then I came out to Strasburg and I had these 8th graders. And I can remember, I'd say, now, would you like to do this? Or, you know, what's your pleasure? How would you like to do this? Duh. Never anything. So I'd always say, well, all right. You don't want to do it this way, you don't want to do it that way, then you do it my way. And so that's how we did it. Until finally they got used to me. I think your class was much more alive than that first group. I didn't know if they knew how to take me, and I wasn't used to this. I wasn't used to the lack of enthusiasm, and they didn't show their feelings that much, where those 6th graders, my goodness, trying to keep track of them was like, I always compared them to a popper of popcorn. You always had to keep a lid on them because they were so enthusiastic. They were like kernels of popcorn that would pop right out of the pan if they had the chance. They were so excited about things, and we had so many different projects that we did. Oh, man. Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, what else would you like to know?
How many years were you in Strasburg?
Two. Only two. They were 2 good years, though.
Now, I had you as an 8th grade teacher, but did you have an 8th grade class before my before I was in 8th grade? Did you? You had the grade ahead of us.
I had the grade ahead of you because I had Stuckey in that group.
Okay, anything you want to share about that group?
Well, it was a tough group to handle. And it was my first go at it, being an 8th grade teacher. I didn't quite understand, you know, the difference between these. And they were really different. I don't know. I had always been. See, I had come from a large city school in St. Paul, Minnesota, you know, where I had 40-some children in a class, and enthusiastic bunch of kids.
That's a big group, though.
It was, but it was fun. I just thoroughly enjoyed my work there, and they had no problem with discipline, so I guess I figured I should go and try my wings as an 8th grade teacher, but there's a big difference between a 6th grader and an 8th grader.
Maybe. I would believe that there would be.
There was. There was a big difference. And then I grew to love those kids too, though. You know, as I had my 8th grade there, I had your class, which was a fun class. I can remember Frances Feist. I mean, some of the things that she said were just riotous. She had such a good sense of humor.
Yeah, she does. Mm-hmm. She was, she's quite a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was.
She's just organized our class reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And she's quite involved. She's teaching.
Which I'm very happy to hear.
She's an administrator.
Which I'm even doubly glad to hear.
She's teaching first grade in Strasbourg and mm-hmm. is the grade school principal. And she seems very happy. And I can see Fran being really, really good with kids mm-hmm. and enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I think she really does.
Yeah. Well, she enjoyed life.
Uh-huh.
She was living life to the full already when I had her in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So you, now, I don't remember you that well. I don't know if you were that more quiet.
I don't know.
I don't know either anymore. A very gentle lady you were in our. I think you're as gentle now as you were then in that eighth grade. And, you know, that was... I don't know how many times you interacted with me, but I would think that...
I got in trouble once. I remember that. I don't remember what for, but I know I got in trouble once. And I'm sure it wasn't the last time.
Yeah. Do you want this door closed?
Where were you first stationed? What was your first assignment? Do you remember?
My first assignment was to... the very first assignment I ever had was that sink or swim situation when we went out as postulants, taught for 1 year. I had a fourth grade class at St. Matthew's in St. Paul, and I had 54 students. And I was glad I had Notre Dame's because I just imitated what my teachers had done. I didn't know what else to do.
And then you had a support group when you came back, too. Did you live here then? Yes, because you were a postulant then, right?
Well, but we lived at the mission.
Okay.
See, I was stationed at St. Matthew's, so we stayed right at the convent. But because of the rules at the time, there were four of us postulants. And the irony of it was there were two of us that were partners. One of the postulants taught first grade, so she had a sister who was her partner. And so they planned their work together every Sunday. Then the other postulant was teaching third grade. She, too, had a sister. And so she'd go downstairs in the convent, and they'd plan their work. And there were two of us postulants who had the fourth grade. I had 54, she had 56. We sat across the table from each other, and we said, well, what are we going to do this week? And so we taught. But we had sisters we could ask questions of. That part was okay. Mm-hmm. But as a professed sister, my very first year out was at Holy Childhood in St. Paul, and I had a third grade. And then the second year I was there, I had a third and fourth.
Combination classroom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which was okay. And then by the time the next year, my third year, they usually wanted to move you around so you had a different experience before you took your renewals. So my third year out as a professed sister, I was in Wabasha, Minnesota, and I had a combination of fifth and sixth class. That was a class. That was probably the toughest class I ever had. That sixth grade was something else. And you see, you know, the thing of it is, I can't tell you right now how many of those students from the fifth and sixth grade class that I had ended up being killed in car accidents, drownings.
Oh, how sad.
It was just unbelievable. One after the other. So it was a tragic, I don't know, it's a very tragic thing.
What were some of your interactions with parents? I would assume at the beginning of your sisterhood you weren't able to leave the convent very often. Were you able to, like when you were in Strasbourg, were you able to go downtown? Were you able to go to people's homes?
No. No, we weren't. That was that, the rule of the rule of enclosure, we called it. We couldn't go. We went from our convent to church or to school, and that was it.
So how did you get your groceries?
We phoned them in, and they were delivered.
They were delivered to the mm-hmm. convent then. Mm-hmm. And did you have someone that prepared the meals?
We did in Strasbourg. We had someone who was preparing the meals for us. When I first went out, we did have what we called home service sisters. And they were the ones who really made a home for us. I always called them our surrogate mothers, because we'd come home from school and the meals would be ready. And we'd open the door after a hard day and we'd either smell fresh bread or cookies.
Well, I'm sure you were very, very glad not to have to prepare a meal after putting in a full day.
Uh-huh. But now we do. Now we do. Times are changed. We don't have home service sisters anymore. So we hurry home. Even here in our small community where I live, there are five of us who live in this small community, and we prepare our own meals in the evening. And so you plan ahead,
mm-hmm.
just like you do.
Right.
You know, there's not much difference. We hurry home after our work and get the meal on the table so that by 5:30, all five of us could sit down to a hot meal. But when I think about it, these home service sisters were preparing for large numbers of sisters. Those were the days when you had a lot of sisters.
Oh.
You didn't have lay folk helping you. And you'd come home and a lot of Peter and Paul, for example. One time I think there were 40 sisters down there. So
that's quite a few.
That's a lot.
Now, where did you live in Strasbourg? Did you live in that great big huge convent, or had you moved over to where the pastor used to live?
Oh no, we lived in what used to be the church. I thought it was a church that was moved in from the countryside. That's the story I heard.
I think
I lived in that, and they always said, well, this is historic because Lawrence Welk slept in this section of the house as a boarder. So it was an old building, and I know that we'd be meditating in our chapel, and they had cedar shingles on the rounding part,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be in there, and all of a sudden you'd hear this drilling sound, and some woodpecker would be there making its, you know, well, it was just like being in a doctor in a dentist chair, and then we'd have. I think Mr. Feist was our maintenance man at school, and he'd come over and get a ladder, and he'd put up a little round, cover up the hole with a little round tin, and he'd nail that in. So if you looked at the back of that chapel from the outside, I saw all these little round tins because that's where the
mm-hmm.
where the birds had drilled the hole.
Now, what Mr. Feist would have that been that was taking care of?
That would be the one that lived down. You know, there was a little cemetery there. Right behind the convent.
Uh-huh.
And if you went down that road,
mm-hmm.
there was a Feist farm just right there on the edge of town.
Okay.
It would be the road between the convent and the rectory. And if you walked out Francie Feist's front door, there was that road and you went right straight down there. And
yeah.
I think that's the Feist farm, because it was a Mr. Feist that was the janitor of the school.
Okay, I just can't recall which Feist that is right now, but...
Well, I can't help you, because there are so many.
Well, the convent is no longer there.
Well, that's what I heard
it
in.
Yeah.
And then I heard they did move into what was the rectory, and no, I don't think Rose was living in a rectory, didn't she live someplace else?
No, I'm not sure where Rose lived, but what they did do is they built a house. It's more like a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not this big, huge rectory that they used to have.
Yeah.
And I think Sister Richard was in the old rectory.
She could have been, yeah.
And Sister Rosie, Sister Rose, mm-hmm. is that who it was?
Rosemary?
Rose?
Yeah. See, Rosemary, Rosemary, I think it is.
Okay, I'm not sure. I didn't know her as well, but I did teach with Sister Richard.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was her first year there, and it was my first year teaching, so it was probably in 74.
Could have been.
And she was just wonderful. Yeah. I don't know what I'd have done without her. She was a savior. Did you have many church duties? Did you have to do a lot of things for the church, like cleaning or getting things ready for her father, or...
Oh, I helped with sacristy work, especially at Sacred Heart. I remember there were three of us because there were so many priests there. It was a huge parish. And then I had servers. So I taught the boys how to become servers. Taught them Latin. So.
Which they're no longer using.
No. But I did church work. I did that church work too at Wabasha. I remember that. But Sacred Heart was the place we spent hours over there, especially on Holy Week.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mother mine.
Oh, I can believe it. Yeah.
All our ceremonies, you know.
Yes, yes. When you were in Strasbourg, sister, I think I remember you being in the habit.
Yes, I was.
What do they call it, the V1?
No. I was there with the original.
Were you?
With the stiff veil.
Okay.
Because that was it. I was there. Well, yes, I had to
Why do I think I remember you? Okay.
The reason I had to be because I didn't change my habit until I was principal down here at Fitzgerald Middle School. And that was after I had been on at Strasbourg. I was at Strasbourg for 2 years, and then they sent me back here to Mankato to be the principal and eighth grade teacher at St. John's, which was a great school here in town. And after 4 years of being eighth grade teacher and principal, they asked me if I would be the administrator of this middle school that they were going to start.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did. I became the first principal of Fitzgerald Middle School here in Mankato. And it was during the time I was principal of that school. That's when I changed. Oh, wait. No, you are right. I'm thinking of when I went so-called modern. You are right. Because we changed habits when we were at Sacred Heart. You're right. I seem to picture
you in my mind as having what I thought was some of the other sisters called the V habit.
Yep. You are right. Absolutely correct. Because we changed at Sacred Heart and I went out to Strasbourg after Sacred Heart. You're right. Because I remember when we first came down, oh Lordy, Lordy, we came down into the community room after getting rid of this stiff veil and this real stiff, what we call was a wimple. And we came down into the community room and we had peripheral vision. And I ended up with a headache, not so much because of the peripheral vision, but I could hear so much better. And all of us seemed to talk so loudly. Oh, that community room, when we came in there were 20 of us at that place. And when we got all of us into that room, it was just like everything, the voices were bouncing off of every place. And I thought, oh my, I did not realize how much I did not hear. And even at that, students thought we heard everything anyhow.
Oh yeah.
But see, we had that wimple, which was pulled back over our ears. And then besides that, we had that stiff veil. And that was, the sound didn't get through that either that well. If I was facing directly at you, there was no problem hearing. And I could hear from behind, but my, what a revelation that was when we came downstairs for the first time. So you are correct. I did have the modified habit when I was out there, which was the cape with a V, and we had like a dickie with a little collar, and we had the soft, well, this part of the veil, you know, on the front over your forehead, that was still stiff, but the veil itself was soft, and we could drive because we had vision then. Up to that time, we would never have been able to drive a car.
Did you have a car in Strasbourg? Did you have one available to you? Or how did you get around? Did you have to?
I can't remember.
Or did you have to?
We asked a lot of people to drive us places.
So you probably didn't have a car.
No.
I know one of the other sisters said that they were real excited when they got a car.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, they had to ask people if they could, I'm sure, take them to Linton, because that's where a lot of the doctoring was done and things like that. What were your feelings when, your reactions to when you actually went into, what do they say, lay clothes? Is that what they call them? When you actually wore the regular clothes, like you're wearing now?
Mm-hmm. Well, we went through the, what kind of material did we use? The stuff that never breathes. It would never breathe. It's polyester.
Yeah.
We went through the blue polyester age. You know, if that's the material we had, it could either be blue or black. Well, I didn't know how the students would react. They found out I was, in those days, I was much smaller than I am right now. So I think they were surprised that there was this little nun inside all that black stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing that really I resented was the fact that it got to the point, either I wore that habit so long, either I could almost read the newspaper through it, it was getting that thin, so I knew I had to get a new habit or go into a modern garb. And so I consulted with my mother, and she, of course, wanted me to go modern. She thought this black stuff was enough. And she said, for heaven's sakes, get some color. She said, you've been in black long enough, so go to blue. Well, you know, the first I changed over Christmas vacation, and by that time, the rule had changed to the point where I could visit, because I remember I took some Christmas presents with my mother out to my sisters for her children, and I still had the long habit on. But for midnight mass, I changed. And what really got to me was the fact my mother and my sister were wearing these long dresses at the time. That was the style. They wore a long dress. So here they came along in long dresses, and here I am running around in this short skirt. You know, to me that was just incongruous. So, but I got used to it. So it wasn't that bad, but I love the old habit. I probably would die in it with, I mean, I'd die of heat exhaustion now if I had to wear everything. But at that time, I was younger. I could handle the heat a lot better, and so it didn't bother me so much.
What do you feel has been one of the biggest changes from when you first came to now?
Well, I think for one thing, you know, all of us were either teachers or home service sisters. And we lived in a large convent, and there were a lot of us around most of the time, even out in the rural areas. I mean, we had quite a few sisters at Strasbourg, if you remember, because
yes,
we had the high school there, too. Mm-hmm. And we always had that community life. That, to me, was a shift from a large sort of community to now we're going out in ones and twos. And we aren't living in a convent. There are a lot of us that are, see, I did that too, and I worked at Buffalo. That was my first experience of living alone in an apartment. And I commuted to my school, which was about 10 minutes away in another town. So we're scattered, very much scattered compared to where, and all over the place. The other thing is there are so many more opportunities now to do so many different things than we did. I mean, either you taught or you didn't teach. Now you can go into any number of types of work. And primarily we stayed in a classroom situation. Now we're working in parishes and doing a variety of type of work and within the church, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that shift, I think, from community life. Community life, I think, has really changed. I do like, we have many more opportunities for a variety of spiritual advantages as far as choosing different types of retreats that we like to do. Our prayer life is, we used to all get up at the same time and all march in the chapel, and we'd all have this meditation sitting straight up. And half of us were still half dead, I think. Now you can pray at a time when it's most convenient and good for your own body, you know. I still pray early in the morning, because that, to me, is the best time for me to pray. Other people who are, you know, night people, they like to pray in the evening, and so now they can. That part. The prayer is a much better prayer, I think. We used to have the Office of the Blessed Mother, and now we pray the Office of the Church. I love the sound. I just think it's... I think our prayer life is much richer now than it was. I may be wrong about that, but it is, from my own personal opinion, I think it is.
Yeah, there have been some, you know, big changes.
Mm-hmm. And we, yeah, and even being able now to interact with our families, I can go and visit my brother. We can have, and if your parents need help, you can go into your own home and help your parents.
Whereas before that, you know, you went home for a funeral, which was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Sister Miriam, I think I had heard that somewhere, that she was home taking care of her parents for a while?
I don't know, which a lot of our sisters have been.
Uh-huh. But she's back now, because I interviewed her this morning. And but I thought at one time...
Was it a Miriam?
Yes.
Could have been, but I don't know Sister Miriam that well, so I don't
but,
know.
But I thought at one time that's what I'd heard, but I'm not sure if that's true. Do you remember any German food? Does anything stick out in your mind, like when you were in Strasbourg? Can you think of anything?
What was that pastry they made?
The round?
Yes.
Kuchen?
That was it. That would be the thing that was...
They could make what they called a raised Kuchen, which is had with a thicker dough, or a thin Kuchen that was kind of made with sugar and cinnamon, real kind of a sweet.
Well, both were kind of sweet to me, I thought. Yeah. One almost seemed like it had almost like a pudding.
Yep, a custard.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did you call that?
Kuchen.
So it's just called Kuchen?
Yes.
Because we used to get that from the people, and that was a real treat. No one in the house made it.
No.
But, you know, none of the sisters did. But we'd have that lots of times. We'd have that for a Sunday breakfast even.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we used to get some really mighty good sausage from the people, homemade sausage. That was a treat.
It must have been good because someone else mentioned that.
It was. Yeah, it was wonderful. Good sausage makers out there.
And so they would just bring it to the house and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'd have it for breakfast or even for supper.
Were there a lot of German meals served at school at lunch, do you remember? I don't remember going to lunch because a lot of times I skipped.
I don't even remember eating at the... I remember walking as students over there, and I know we
didn't
ate in the church basement.
Go?
We ate in the church basement.
Yeah, from the school to the
yeah.
church. That
mm-hmm.
was that long walk.
That's right. And that's all I remember. And then I remember that one of the... sisters were in charge of, one of the sisters would be in charge of policing the place, that is, the students were appointed to clean it up, they had to mop the floors and get everything back in good shape. And the reason I remember that, I think Sister Michelle used to have the job, and then when there was, I can't remember her name, there was a Brown from